Hello, everyone. Welcome to Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. As if you couldn't tell, it's tough for me sometimes to know how to get a podcast started. I have a subject in mind. I have an intention in mind, intentioned end in mind. But where to begin? For me, context is so very important. Patients come in and see me with the same struggles. They make the appointment. I'm not sure all that it's taken for them to pick me and arrange. I'm sure it's a lot. Not just picking me, but picking me over others or making the selection of who to go see, which then leads to me. And then going through insurance and benefits, and the managed care is not quite as difficult as it once was. Can you go to any provider? Do you have to go to vetted providers, insurance company vetted providers? It gets complicated. What's the cost going to be? What's the co-payment going to be? All of those things. I have to make time available. Arrange. Most of the time there's others involved. Could be kids, it could be significant others, spouse, significant other involved. Work. All of those things. And then they show up for the appointment. I'm there, presuming I'm running on time, which I make a very high priority. Make it a very high priority to stay on time. And I come out and greet them in our waiting room, take them back to the office, introduce myself, offer a cordial sort of welcome, and then I'll say, "What's up? What's going on? What brought you here today?" And usually they'll look back at me and say, "I'm not really sure." Now, that sounded a bit anticlimactic, did it not? I know they did know why they came, or they would not have gone through all of those struggles, troubles, as I've pointed them out, to get to that moment. But in that moment, I don't know that it's entirely brain freeze, but it could be. But I also, and anxiety could be part of that. Just new person meeting somebody for the first time. After all, you're going to be telling them a lot. Things that maybe others know, but not everybody knows. And maybe not to the same depth or degree of knowing or knowledge that will come out in the psychotherapy, the psychological counseling session. Could also be, and many will say this, "I really don't know where to begin. Where should I begin?" I said, I usually say, "It doesn't matter. We'll get there." Psychology Today, January, February of 2024. Under the treatment therapy section, what to talk about in therapy. Choosing what to discuss can feel daunting for someone new to the process. Here's what clients should keep in mind, by Devon Fry, staff writer. After completing the often arduous tasks of researching nearby therapists, setting up consults, and choosing a clinician who seems like a good fit, first-time therapy clients may suddenly find themselves grappling with an unexpected question. Wait! What am I supposed to talk about? Having a 50-minute session to fill and no set agenda with which to fill it can feel overwhelming, especially for those who have never been in therapy before and aren't sure what to expect. Luckily, deciding what to talk about is often less fraught than people might imagine, and they can expect some help from their therapist along the way. What's covered in therapy? The simplest and perhaps most obvious answer is that clients should talk about whatever they want or whatever the issue is that's bringing them to therapy in the first place. Common jumping off points include tensions in relationships, past trauma, difficulties at work, or recent mood changes. Clients may also come to therapy to discuss long-term goals, upcoming life changes, or complex feelings like shame or grief. But while the freedom to talk about anything may feel liberating for some clients, others find it intimidating or confusing. Someone struggling with serious anxiety, for example, may believe that voicing their worries aloud would be impossible, says Stephanie Cox, a mental health counselor in Jacksonville Beach, Florida. Because a hallmark of anxiety is avoidance, when faced with the prospect of opening up, someone who's already anxious may start to think, actually, I don't want to talk about any of this. Other clients may desperately want to talk about what's bothering them, but find that they're just not sure where to start. Someone who is feeling depressed without any discernible cause, for example, may feel at a loss when a therapist asks, "So what brings you to therapy?" This is perhaps especially true for clients who present as well-functioning. Without an obvious culprit, say a career challenge, to point to, identifying a specific topic that warrants exploration can be daunting. Questions to contemplate. What can clients do to overcome this obstacle and start talking? As a first step, Cox says, it can help to take some time before a session to make a game plan and identify one or two concrete areas to address. General questions like, why did I decide to seek therapy now? Or, where in my life am I getting stuck? Can aid in this process. Answers can focus on outcomes, I'm struggling to meet deadlines at work, or on internal processes like, I feel empty and sad a lot. Some clients may find metaphors helpful, says Nicholas Balasis, a psychotherapist in Ontario, Canada. I had a client recently who said he didn't feel depressed or anxious, but just that something was off, as if there were no salt in his food. We just explored that feeling. If self-exploration isn't particularly fruitful, coming up with a list of questions to ask the therapist can also help clients, especially first-time ones. Feel that they have something to talk about. Viewing the first therapy session as an interview of the therapist can help quell some fears, explains Cox, and can shift some of the focus from the client to the process itself. Useful questions include what modalities the therapist uses, what their process is typically like, and what they expect from the client, both in and out of the therapy room. Why is my therapist silent? It's almost never necessary for a client to bring enough pre-planned material to fill an entire session. That's because in most cases, the therapist will ask questions, note patterns in the client's thinking or behavior, or otherwise guide the conversation. This is especially true of therapists who employ more modern, evidence-based methods, including cognitive behavioral techniques. On the other hand, some therapists still employ a more traditional psychoanalytic approach, which encourages free association and typically involves less input from the therapist. While some clients find immense value in a less structured approach, perhaps feeling that it leads to unexpected topics or surprising insights, Others may see their therapist's relative lack of input as confusing or distressing, especially if they feel unsure of what to talk about. For these clients, it may be that this therapist simply isn't a good fit, says Cox. Therapy is not just one thing, it's a million different things, not all of which will be the right option for a particular client. Those who prefer a more interactive approach should ask their therapist for a referral to another clinician who may be a better match. What should you never tell your therapist? It's normal for clients to wonder if they should withhold certain things, either because they're worried that the therapist will tell someone else or because they fear being judged. In the vast majority of cases, the former worry will never come to pass. Therapists are ethically bound to protect clients' confidentiality, except in very rare cases when the client poses an imminent danger to themselves or others, when the therapist believes that a child, elderly person, or dependent adult is being abused, or when they are legally forced by court order. Otherwise, most therapeutic interactions will never leave the privacy of the therapist's office. Concerned clients are welcome to ask about the ins and outs of confidentiality to give themselves peace of mind. The latter fear, worrying that the therapist will judge them if they share something sensitive, is common and completely normal, Cox says. It's natural to be hesitant to talk about vulnerable things, period. Let alone with someone who you just met. Clients should feel empowered to draw boundaries if they don't want to discuss certain subjects. An ethical therapist will recognize a boundary a client puts forth and know that it's not going to be beneficial to push them there. But effective therapy demands some discomfort, and almost every client will eventually be called upon to share something that they'd instinctively rather hide. Ideally, they won't feel judged by the therapist in these moments. If they do, it may simply mean that it's not a good match. Yet therapists are human, and it's not always possible for them to stay totally neutral if a client tells them something upsetting. But reacting is not the same as judging. Some therapists may even discuss the reaction with the client, or the client may ask about it. That kind of conversation can be productive for the therapeutic process when it's well handled. Balasis explains, even if a topic feels unmentionable early in therapy, it may not stay that way forever, Cox emphasizes. Clients often think, I don't want anyone to know this. I'm going to feel a lot of shame. But over time, they're likely to recognize the immense power of vulnerability. That's where the magic of therapy happens, in the sharing of things that once felt unshareable. And again, under the therapy treatment section, Psychology Today, January, February of 2024, what to talk about in therapy. Choosing what to discuss can feel daunting for someone new to the process. Here's what clients should keep in mind, by Devon Fry, staff writer with Psychology Today. So my hope would be that you'd have an easier time than I sometimes feel like I do. Hopefully it's not too apparent to you, the listener, when I begin the podcast. But for those of us who sometimes have a bit too much thoughts going on at once, and our memory is somewhat challenged, or at least our ability to remember where we're going at any particular moment gets challenged to the extent that we could feel like we're lost in all of those extraneous, off-point kind of thoughts, or drowning in all of those thoughts put together, composite. I hope that going to therapy might be a little bit less daunting, as the article put it, to you for having read this to you and for Devon Fry having written it. It is overwhelming. It is a bit daunting. I do everything I can from the very first moment that we introduce ourselves, the patient and myself, and with that go on a first name basis, and with that try to ease them if I sense they're feeling a bit comfortable. I don't know that I'm the funniest guy in the world, but I try to have a fairly pleasant personality. I might comment on something that they're wearing. I might comment on the weather. I might comment on some current event at some regional or national level when it comes to news. And with that, strike up a conversation. There's just a lot of small talk that we might get into. And the small talk does not seem then to bring us to the end of necessarily why a person comes to see a psychotherapist or a psychological counselor. It is all for the sake of rapport. I even choose my attire. What I dress as, or what type of dress code when I go to work, sometimes based on where I'm going. Just knowing that I live in an area that is a bit metropolitan, but also at times there could be situations, circumstances where I'm placed in a rural setting, and dress codes are different for those two places. It does not mean that I lack integrity, I don't think. It just means I'm not so bound to what I wear as my identity, but my patients may be. They may respond. My verbiage, my language, the choices of words might change. I may use more colloquialisms. I may use more common language to make individuals feel a bit more comfortable. I tend to be a fairly big picture guy, so my particular approach is to see things in broadest of terms, but not to the neglect of the individual or the uniqueness of that person. And I try not to, again, the article speaks of judging. I try not to be prejudiced. I try not to, before I get a chance to really find out, figure out what's going on before I get a chance to really find out. So that I don't just stereotype and with that profile. Although confessing that so much of what I do diagnostically is just that, profiling. It's not you, it's the symptoms, so that we can then come up with a disorder, so that we can then look at common protocols to address the particulars of that disorder. And for the sake of some communication, we identify language like depression and anxiety. And maybe one doesn't understand the meaning, but we'll attach that just through some observation and feedback. All of that, though, is really based upon one's feeling comfortable. And yes, the psychotherapist should feel comfortable, but even more so, it should be the patient. Because if you're not feeling comfortable, you're probably not going to either think as clearly because of the anxiety. Maybe you'll be afraid of being judged and hold information back. Maybe you'll not know where to begin. Maybe you won't feel comfortable enough even talking. You just want to listen. I also encourage, as a thought that goes along with all of that, assertiveness. Just not only be you, but just say what's on your mind and tell me what you're feeling. And throughout the course of the intervention or the session, I will ask that question a lot, especially if I notice someone is getting a bit into their own head. The rapport is being a bit I think compromise is an okay word. The communication runs risk of breaking down. I will just say, let's stop just for a minute. Tell me what you're thinking right now. Tell me how you're feeling right now. Tell me, where did that come from? And that is what I'm trained in. It's not interrogation, as with questions, but it is curiosity. It is information gathering. But again, it should be cordial. It should be friendly. We should be on the same level as far as ideas and as much we could. Cultural variables, notions. And with that, I might be a bit more sensitive than you are coming in, because I see so many people in, again, so many different cultural contexts, urban, rural. I mentioned that earlier. There's a lot to say about socioeconomics. I have to. A psychotherapist has to just be sensitive to those things. But it shouldn't take anything away from the patient or where they're at. And why I believe psychotherapy should not be so superficially determined, surface things such as that, those things, as far as whether you can work with somebody. There should be some common human element or dimension that we've all been there. We've all needed someone to talk to. We've all felt isolated. We've all felt as if even maybe those that we traditionally have turned to just can't be there for us. Maybe it's something between us and them even. We need someone who appreciates who we are and is interested, again, curious, values us, respects us. One who's trained and knowledgeable. One who is willing to be equally assertive, but does it in a kind way and with unconditional positive regard. That's what we used to call it. Just, again, a bit of love that gets directed towards you. Why would anyone want to go see someone that they don't really feel at least that minimum level of acceptance and valuing, which everything we do too, at least that I attempt to do too, is always along the lines of courage, encouragement, building up. I'm not intention to, I am not inclined to, I would never want to tear anybody down. And in that, I might offer some critical thought, as in, well, maybe you should try this way, since the other way isn't working. I hope it comes across just that easily and that simply, and makes it much more easy for the person I'm speaking to receive it. But should there be occasions when it's not a good match or a good fit, sometimes that does happen. I'm also usually the one that asks, well, what do you think about it? You've got a chance to sit down and speak to me, talk with me. You've heard what I've had to say. You know a bit about my personality. You know about certainly the office. You know about all of the other things that were logistics that had to be, the boxes had to be checked before we even got a chance to sit down. By that first session, we've generated a treatment plan, at least a general one. I've identified the patient's goals and then offered some ideas as to how to get there. I've explained what the therapeutic process looks like in terms of just that theory, what approaches I'll use, what approaches work best with these particular conditions. I will have answered all the questions, hopefully, that the patient has. And I just say, what do you think? Is this what you want to do? Do you want to come back? Because I can understand if you don't, and be glad to help you, would want to assist. If it's not a good match, there's plenty of others out there. I'm not the only one. I'm not pretending that I'm any better than anyone else. Although I have to say, and you'd probably want me to, I'm pretty confident about what I do. And I think it's okay to say, I believe that I do it pretty well, and I certainly have enough patience that would back that up. And so I'm going to not be offended in the least bit if there's something about me, personality. Maybe I'm a trigger. Maybe my personality type has not always gone so well for you in your life. I understand those things. I am more than open and not threatened in any way to help you, assist you in finding someone else that might be of assist to you. And that's why I do enjoy Psychology Today and being part of their directory of providers, because there you get to see a lot of providers, and many, if not all, have pictures, and some have video where they're speaking to you, and you get to hear their voice and see a bit more animated their mannerisms, so that you can do your due diligence in screening for the most likely candidates based on your intuitions. But whether I would make the referral or I direct you back to or send you back to the Psychology Today directory, I know you will find someone eventually, hopefully not too far out, that would be a better match if it should be, perchance. I would not want it to, and I wouldn't believe it would have to come to that, but perchance, it happens occasionally. You need to go somewhere else. Now, the greater reality is your insurance company may say, no, you have to go someplace else. That's why most of us are cautious about the notion of managed care. Who better than the person who is the clinician to make those decisions, and not only clinician, but the individual who's met with you. But that's another podcast, and that's more a complaint on my side, which I will reserve for a better opportunity to present that in full scope. How was that? But I do appreciate the chance to present the podcast to you on a weekly basis. Should you enjoy it, then I'd like to invite you back to our next edition of Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. You can reach out to us at drmdclay@thewordhouse.com. You can find us at thewordhouse.com. You can also call 304-523-WORD. 9673. We're at Word House on Facebook and YouTube. But again, if you don't want to communicate directly, I do hope that you at least will keep us in mind and look for our next offering of Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. Until we get a chance to speak again, I want to wish you the best of not only good health, but good mind health, mental health. Thanks.